It's time for the Berkshire Edge on Air, it's nice to welcome them back after the vacation. Well, welcome back, David and Marcy. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Good morning. It's nice to hear your voice.
It was an educational junket, right?
Pardon?
The vacation, quote, unquote, was an educational junket, correct?
It was, yes. It was a combination. We went to Israel, and we went for the first week on a study mission to see what was the situation between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And then after that, we took a week's vacation, the first one we've taken in 4 years since we started the Edge. So it was a great year.
Well, you're ahead of us.
You're ahead of us. I can imagine.
We're still working on one. It's 10 years. All right.
Well, vacations aside, it's nice to have you back. And let's take a look at some of the things we're going to talk about. First of all, the Berkshire Environmental Summit was held in Pittsfield.
Yes.
That's right, last weekend. And it was organized by Environment Massachusetts. And it was a way of seeing how to transition to 100% renewable energy for the Berkshires and the state. This is one of a number of similar conferences held throughout Massachusetts, but the obviously the goal is to have the state become, reliant in 100% on renewable resources, which is, I think we're leading the way. California, eat your heart out,
So, now, does what the president did, was this brought up, what the president did with solar energy and solar panels, was that brought up at this conference?
You know, it wasn't. Although as far as I know, and as far as our reporters knew, it wasn't brought up. The whole theme of the conference was to, in fact, the initiative for it was, of course, because of Trump's distaste for sustainable energy and his climate change denial.
I don't think it's. We'll move on to the next story. I don't think it's climate change denial. I think it's that he's got such commitments to oil and to coal climate change be damned. He's going to try to bring back coal and oil as the major forces, and that's what it's all about. I don't. Deep down inside, it all comes down to money.
Well, I think it also comes down to votes, because I'm not sure that it's a question of money in this case. The solar energy industry could generate a lot of money and be very profitable and also be very good for us, but that's not the energy that he's interested in.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Right.
I think that's the issue.
All right. Well, we'll go on to...
But I did want to say a little bit more about Great Barrington, though, because, Great Barrington has been... Great Barrington is kind of ahead of people in being sensitive to environmental issues. And we've had a couple of, other things not having to do with the sources of energy, but, we were probably one of the first towns in the state, maybe we were the second, to outlaw individual-use plastic bags that you get at supermarkets. There have been several more since, but we did it about 3 years ago, and now we have a group that we wrote about a week ago that has proposed that we ban all individual plastic water bottles, and that's going to be voted on at the town meeting in May. But, this is an effort. The Great Barrington water is very good, and what these people would like is that no store in town sells those individual water bottles, but that we have bottles that say something like GB Water or something like that, and that you have your own bottle, and participating merchants will fill it for you from their taps. So we're waiting to see. So this is kind of very innovative, and we're waiting to see how that vote goes in May at the town meeting.
All right.
But it's on the It'll be on the docket for our town meeting.
Okay, just a little plug for Cornwall. Cornwall is the greenest town in the state of Connecticut. So
isn't that nice?
It's great for Cornwall. Fair.
Yeah.
All right.
how do you measure that?
I don't know how the state measures it, but they measure it. But Cornwall's so green, their Christmas tree is lit by solar.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Plus llamas.
Even at night, huh?
They manage to do it. I don't know how they do it, but they keep it lit all the time.
It stores us, yeah.
All right. How about this story? A woman in the Berkshires whose grandnephew is a student at Marjorie Stonemason Douglas School, and now it's in Parkland, Florida.
Oh, yeah. It's not Stonemason. It's Stoneman. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
Yeah.
Spell check.
Yeah. Cameron Caskey is his name, and he's a leader of the student movement against the availability of guns, not only in Florida but nationwide. And he started this Never Again movement, which is hashtag Never Again. And he was the one who confronted Senator Rubio about the money that Florida Senator Rubio, about the money he gets from the NRA. It was these kids. God bless them, you know, but...
And it was really very dramatic. You know, it was on CNN. They had a panel, and Caskey, who's a high school junior, you know, got up and was insistent that Rubio answer him about whether or not he's going to take any more money from the NRA. Rubio, of course, would not say he wouldn't. His argument was the NRA was following him. He wasn't following the NRA. So, you know, they were investing in him because they liked his opinion rather than his following them because he liked their opinion.
You know what's really great about the kids, though, is that they are being, A, they're smart, B, they're media savvy, C, they're being guided, and they are not... you know, they really understand this isn't a one-off.
But you know, you know what's also great about the kids? They brought out a fact which people didn't realize. As much money as the NRA spends and gives to these senators and these congresspeople, basically, it is not the type of money that you see from other PACs and other industries. These people are being bought at incredibly low rates. I mean, what a bargain for the National Rifle Association, where some people roll in $600,000-$700,000 in donations. The average donation per senator is between $50,000-$100,000
from the NRA.
From the NRA.
Really? That's incredibly low.
It's incredibly low. And you say to yourself, at this particular juncture, my gosh! I mean, It's more tribal than anything else, I really believe, this belief about certain types of guns. But we'll see what happens. I think these students in Florida have started a national movement that in a year to 2 years and 3 years will pay off big time for people that don't want assault rifles.
Well, I hope so. And, of course, you know, they'll be voting in
two
or 3 years. So.
Well, we have a companion story on this, which is that the local school committees are refusing to comply, or said they will refuse to comply with Trump's call for armed teachers. In fact, one chair of a school committee, Carl Stewart, chair of the Southern Berkshire Regional School District, said that he would quit if they start. He's a former federal prosecutor, by the way. And he said he would resign if this became policy of his school district.
Wow.
So there are some real outrage at this suggestion of arming teachers.
I'm against arming teachers because when I was high school, I would have been shot at least 5 times.
Yes, exactly.
I'm telling you right now.
On unimpeachable grounds.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
I'm not making light of it, but it's true. I angered some teachers to the point where they lost their temper, which was that back then where we had gas lights. All right.
But wait a minute. What did they do when they lost
their temper? I actually had one teacher that jumped me and started a fight with me.
Really?
Yeah. And you know
we
what?
Had more time. I'd like to know what you did.
I wasn't bad. It wasn't bad, but I deserved it. That's all I'll say.
All right. So I just want to say that in fairness, news-wise, the Florida State Senate did vote against arming most classroom teachers.
In the way that
things have to work because that's the pre-existing structure, whether or not they do work, that is the most recent thing that occurred. The Florida State Senate voted against arming most classroom teachers.
All right.
But the operative word is most. I mean, I think what they said is that if you are mostly in the classroom, then you don't have to be armed. But I don't know what that means for coaches and for other school personnel. There's still going to be an awful lot of guns kicking around in these schools.
My whole thing on this is that we have 300,000 soldiers that sit in Germany waiting to do things. If you want to really put a security guard at each school, bring them back. They're already on the payroll. Bring them back.
Right.
And they've been trained.
And they're at least trained.
They're trained in they if there's a target out there that you might hit that would be innocent, they're trained not to do that. So they're already trained. I think I mean that would solve a lot of the problems for schools anyways.
I think the problem is these assault weapons have just got to go. They can't be available to civilians. It just can't.
I know, but
and
it's not,
that's
not going to happen.
All of these other ideas are just workarounds and not failing to confront the real problem is that you have these deadly weapons that are available to 18-year-olds.
Irrefutably, that is a real problem. But even
so,
if
that
you
means
ban
you know
them,
what this means. This means that what Trump and these people and the NRA are calling for is that a shootout at a school is safer than banning these assault weapons.
It sounds ludicrous. I agree with that, but it's something that's got to be worked towards because the sides are so set now. It's just impossible.
They are.
It's impossible to get that giant leap that you need. So we have to take steps somehow to get there. And maybe I'm not going to call them kids. These students are going to lead the charge where we're finally going to get some action on it.
Well, I don't know why our schools have to be the site of high noon.
What is
going on? Yeah. This country is it's kind of insane.
It's lost its direction. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
well, let's move on to the next story.
Okay.
The Berkshire County
Speaking
District.
Speaking of insane, we have David Capeless, who's resigning. I shouldn't say that.
Resigning with no warning and very abruptly. And, of course, a lot of people are wondering why. The political explanation is that his term is going to be up in November. He wanted his second in command to be the incumbent when the election comes up in November. But still, wondering what's going on here. I mean, what's he hiding?
Well, either that or else he just caught it like the flu from Washington D.C., where everybody resigns.
Well, maybe so. But he's been around for a long time.
A long time, I was going to say. He's not a short timer.
His family. The background there is his family. He's part of the Democratic machine in Pittsfield. There's an elementary school named after his father, who is a judge, Superior Court judge. So, he's well known in the law enforcement, judiciary circles in Pittsfield. And but some of his attitudes are a little bit, let's say, out of date. I know he's really opposed to legalizing marijuana. I mean, he was issues that he has opposed the new state law that allows recreational use of marijuana, and he was just deaf against that. He's not in favor of a kind of drug court which would allow defendants caught in drug raids to be treated as addicts and as a health issue rather than an incarceration issue. So mm-hmm. he's kind of a hardliner DA, and I'm not sure who this, what the position of his successor will be, but he's been far more hardline than the previous DA there.
All right.
So.
All right, we've got about 4 minutes left.
Okay.
We'll go quickly to the honoring of W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yeah, well, this is more actually, this particular story is not so much about W.E.B. Du Bois, but there was another African-American civil rights leader who has a strong connection to Great Barrington, and that was James Weldon Johnson, who was, he was a lawyer, a diplomat,
A writer,
and also he was the first secretary, which means the first administrator of the NAACP. He owned a house in Great Barrington in the 30s, maybe it was in the 20s and the 30s.
Right across from your house.
Right across from
my house, Marcy.
Yes, right across from, and down the street from the
Simon's Rock,
Bard College at Simon's Rock. And so a couple bought James Weldon Johnson's house a few years ago, and we've written about them before. They are turning the house into the center of the James Weldon Johnson Foundation. And last year, for the first time, they had five, and they are dedicated to arts by African Americans because Johnson was so well known as an artist and a writer. And he was a friend of W.E.B. Du Bois. They were about a year apart in age.
Well, Johnson was part of the Harlem Renaissance.
Part of the Harlem Renaissance, right.
In the 20s. Yeah.
At any rate, They started an artist in residence project with Simon's Rock down the street, and last summer they had five artists in residence, and this week there's an exhibit of the work of the five artists. They were supposed to have a big reception last Friday, and it got snowed out. So this exhibit is only up until the 9th, which I guess is Saturday, maybe, but it is well worth going to see if anybody is in the area, because these are stunning works of art, and they are the first of, the annual residencies of artists in honor of James Weldon Johnson. So this comes at a time where Great Barrington is finally coming around to recognizing W.E.B. Du Bois. There's been a lot of hostility toward Du Bois because at the end of his life he was a communist and he died abroad in Africa. He abandoned the United States, according to his detractors. But this year is his 150th birthday, and there have been, in fact, a number of celebrations for Du Bois. And now we also have recognition of James Weldon Johnson, so it's mm-hmm. very exciting.
Yeah, this is Great Barrington, it turns out, has been a center for African-American intellectuals and writers. And it's over the years, and it's not been recognized. And so there's a big push, as we've, I think, mentioned before, to have a statue of, or some kind of statue or monument to Du Bois in a public place in Great Barrington, perhaps at the library.
Because he is, in fact, Great Barrington's most famous son.
Yeah.
And he was supported, and the story's very interesting if we have time, but, he was recognized by a group of white men as having tremendous promise, and they paid for his college education.
He went to Harvard.
Yeah. He went to Fisk and then Harvard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are out of time, but we'll very quickly.
We can't be. Well, there's more.
In 30 seconds, episode 6 of your serialized novel.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Oh, that's great.
We have a serialized novel going on. It's called Over the Edge. It runs on Sundays. And each chapter is done by a different writer in the area. So we have no idea where the story is going. Each writer can take it wherever they want.
But it is, in fact, pretty good.
It's excellent.
It's a really fun read, and they're not that long, so even if you have to start on episode 1 when we're about to publish 7 next week, you can catch up very quickly, and And it's a lot of fun. So
it's
on a snowy day, read the novel.
All right. TheBerkshireEdge.com. TheBerkshireEdge.com. We'll speak to you guys again next week.
Okay.
Welcome back.
Bye.
Now, that is This Week in the Berkshire Edge here on Robinhood Radio, TheBerkshireEdge.com.